Hi, John.
Hello.
Do you know what I hate?
What's that?
I hate when your last words are recorded in a bear that had your DNA reflected back at it, and all you hear is your own screams coming from its horrible mutated mouth.
Hate to see that happen.
It is a weekly occurrence. I don't know if you know this. I was raised just outside of Chernobyl.
Yeah, you should not keep going back there, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, who watched Annihilation? There's no landing done.
Okay.
I've seen it once before, but I watched it again last night, thinking I'm gonna watch like half of it, as I often do, and then I'll just finish it up after work before we record. And this is the first time it's ever happened with movies on this show. Didn't want to turn it off. I went, nope, watching this whole thing.
Because, yeah.
Boy, I complain a lot on the show about like pacing and editing. This movie is expertly paced.
Yep.
Like, holy fuck, does it runs. Like, it seems like I had the thought of, wow, they get into the anomaly really quick, but it's like, no, that's like the first third of the film.
Yeah.
It's just really well put together that, like, it's just paced so perfectly. This thing is, I'm going to go as far as to say, good.
Yeah, no, I this is one of my favorite movies of last year, and it is extremely my shit in terms of that kind of, like, dreamlike, measured pacing, the, like, cosmic horror, body horror. Just being pretty like somber, but somehow uplifting.
Yeah.
No, it's great. And I think one thing I read about it attributed that sort of the success of that pacing to Alex Garland being a novelist turned filmmaker. That he's not the guy that wrote the book. It was Jeff Vandermeer, but that having knowing how to sort of like meet out information over that sort of period of time. In a way to keep you interested, the way books can kind of do that, I thought effectively translated to the screen, and particularly just like because this I have not read the book. I know one of the someone on our Facebook page commented that they read it, and we're like, I don't need to read the other ones. But he said Alex Garland apparently didn't reread the book to write the script. He wanted it to feel like a dream of the book, which I kind of like.
I have not read the book either. I you know that was going to be my first question for you because you're on record on the show that, you know, reading's for nerds and you hate it a lot.
Mm.
So I was worried that you may dislike this movie, but since he only read the book once, it was kind of vaguely based on his remembrance of it. It's distanced enough.
Yeah. That's my thing. I could break kayfabe here and talk about the last, science fiction book I read, The Three Body Problem.
Oh, I like that one. I only read the first book, though.
Yeah, well, see, I did not because some of that was, it just, so much of it felt like turgid physics lectures.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, here's kind of an interesting concept. Now let me explain it all.
Yeah.
Whereas this was like, it refracts your DNA. Cool. That's a thing. That's, I get it. I don't need to explain exactly how it's doing it or whatever. You've just given me enough to run with. It's like an episode of Star Trek. Like, you said something smart and then too smart and then you put something dumb after it for the idiots to get.
I think you're right about the novel pacing because this felt, and I was going to say, I talked about this all the time, but I don't know if I've ever mentioned it on this show, but I wrote a novel and it's a weird, trippy novel that uses a lot of dream logic.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like this movie was really speaking my language at like a certain, like, so in the novel I wrote called Periphery, available on Amazon, everybody, you should buy one. There's a fucked up tree that's kind of odd and does weird things. And I'm like, man, that would fit well in this universe, in the world of the Shimmer. And I'm not pretentious like that. I never relate shit back to my art, but I was like, oh, this is actually kind of like, I almost felt like, oh, maybe what I create isn't so far away from like what the culture could understand. But then I also realized that this movie's got like a 60% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Which I'm aghast that that's.
Well, funnily enough, I guess one of the financiers at Paramount really like didn't like it, thought it was gonna be too difficult and confusing for people, and like had all these notes, and the producer Scott Rudin actually backed Alex Garland and was like, no, I like the way it is. We're not making those changes.
Oh, good.
And so the financier was kind of like, yeah, well, screw you. And kind of like just kind of dumped the movie. So it didn't get the kind of press I think it should have. Like particularly with all the in the year of our woke Lord 2019, for all the like yay women stuff, this is a pretty women centric movie, and like that, yeah, that doesn't matter. We don't need to talk about that, you know. And it didn't get that kind of press. Not that that's the only reason anyone should see this movie. I think it's a fantastic movie, but it ended up like he let Netflix handle the distribution or something. It really just kind of got buried.
Because I didn't really hear about it when it came out. I just want to, I need to explain to you where my head just went in this is more things that happen when you and I are sitting at a bar.
Right.
Literally when you said women led, I just had this whole run go through my head comparing Shimmer to the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
Yes.
And had this whole, I don't know why I went there. Like, uh-huh. But I had this,
it's a glow.
This concept of Shimmer being Gorgeous Ladies. And I'm like, oh, I should make a joke about that. I'm like, but I don't, there's no,
I don't know how to
can't
do
be,
it. Yeah.
That can't be put into human speech. That just has to be my brain makes those connection. Like, yeah, that's my bear with human voice. Yeah. The movie starts off with, she's being debriefed by Benedict Wong, Dr. Strange's friend.
Well, I've said for a long time that basically I've wanted to go to therapy that's essentially the therapy that's in the movie THX 1138, which is just like you pick up a phone and you call this recorded voice and like there's a picture of Jesus that like reassures you. And then I think you get drugs. And I'm like, that sounds great. I just want that.
That actually does sound pretty great.
But now that's shifted. Now I just want, every night before I go to bed, Benedict Wong to come into my room and debrief me. Because he's got this very, like, even when he's kind of being, like, not critical isn't the word, but a little bit, like, authoritative, it's still like, oh, this is very nice. Yes, I am wrong. I make my own problems. Thank you, Benedict Wong.
But anyway, it opens with that, and it's kind of cutting back and forth between her being debriefed and what actually happens. But, like, the opening thing, and I just want to bring this up because I think this is important to talk about in our kind of 2019 culture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired of a lot of the movies we watch where they just fridge the boyfriend. Great. Yeah. I get it. It's a narrative convenience to kill the... No, but I wrote that down. I didn't word it that way, but I wrote it down unironically that we do watch a weird amount of movies where a guy dying is the impetus. Oh, yeah. No, so Planet of the Apes, dead father.
John Lithgow.
Yeah. Jupiter Ascending, dead father. Batman Return, dead parents, but yeah.
Right.
I know Interstellar's dead wife. Okay, maybe it was just two in a row that we did. Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yep.
Dead uncle.
Dead Ben.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's all the ones on the first page of the website. But there's the trope is fridging the girlfriend. We have like a weird amount of
dead guys.
Yeah.
That's very, let's pat each other on the back.
No, I wasn't trying to say we're woke. I was just saying, like,
no.
It just statistically, it's weird that, like, this is...
We keep running into that.
Yeah, it's just... But it also makes me think, did they get the trope wrong? Is it just narratively convenient to just kill, like, just kill somebody close to the lead character? And just
I mean, that is certainly a thing. Like, I was actually, there was a critic I was reading that was just talking about, like...
Say it stinks? He's like a heavyset guy. No,
it was just like, I don't need to see...
Kind of looks like he's from The Simpsons.
I don't need to see more dead parent movies. Like, with, like, kids fiction.
Oh, yeah.
That's like, yeah, that I get it. That's such a common thing. Particularly, like, the parents are dead, and then you get a scene of them later, like, saying something, imparting some wisdom to the kid. That's a frequent trope that you see. Almost like Linus Roche in Batman Begins, where you see all the footage of him waxing philosophical to Batman.
Yeah. All right. So back to this. Boyfriend gets fridged, but I do love the relationship between Princess Amidala and Poe Dameron, which I'm going to refer to them as that the entire time.
I also like that it's Poe Dameron.
Well, that's his name.
It's Dameron.
Is
technically.
It? I thought it was Dameron. One of those orangutan things again.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God.
No, that thing was great. And I think, again, this movie does a great job of, in terms of meeting out information, of giving these characters a little bit of depth. Or at least making them feel real and not just like archetypes by just spending time with these people. Like that one scene a little later on with her and Lena and Kane in bed together and like they're just kind of like flirtily, she's making fun of him because he's talking about her pining, looking up the same stars. Yeah. Like that was this very human moment between the two of them, and it was great.
I liked a lot of their relationship. However, I didn't like that she was sleeping with a dog. Well, his name's Kane, and of course that sounds like canine.
What?
That's your argument from Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. No, his name was...
Kane Wise.
Kane Wise.
Yeah, I know. I just need the Wise.
No, no, that's why I didn't get the joke.
I just
said knock, not knock, knock.
Every time they said his Kane name, Wise. I just kept thinking
about
you.
I'm really angry that I didn't even think
of
that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I just kept picturing... I was looking at those self-named stars. I was thinking you were laughing the same way of his name being Kane.
Of Kane
that's Wise. All I thought about every fucking time they brought up his funny. Goddamn name was... Yeah. Let me start with the detraction of the film, which sucks, but it's early in it, so I kind of forget.
Yeah.
And it's not this movie's fault. It's movies as a whole, but it's the class she's teaching. She's like some kind of college professor, and she's teaching a course in like some kind of oncology biology thing. And she's teaching like the most 101 basic ass
Johns
lesson.
Hopkins.
Yeah. And it is like I mean, obviously it's talking to the audience. It's setting up like kind of thematically what it is. And it's fine. I shouldn't say I hate it, but it's like, I like this movie so much. And I like how smart, smart's the wrong word, but I like how it doesn't shovel everything to you.
You know what?
And this was one of those like,
it's not smart, but I'd say I would use the word thoughtful.
Yeah.
I guess is how I would describe this movie. But yeah, and I always love that in movies, particularly when they're college movies and a bell rings. I think that happens in Candyman, which I saw fairly recently, where like he's teaching a college class and a bell rings.
Oh, yeah.
Where are you going to college that a bell is going off? So she gives this whole, which on first watch, I didn't think too much of it. But really when you, on subsequent watches, boy, that's just like, hey, everyone, the movie. Here is what I'm describing, because one of the readings of this movie, and I think one of the reasons I like this movie is you can look at it a whole bunch of different ways, is that the whole thing's a metaphor for the big casino, the old cancer.
Oh, I think clams.
Yes. Because she gives a whole speech about how...
marinara sauce is good, but sometimes you should just have it in straight lemon.
But cells splitting and all that stuff, and uses specifically a cancer cell. Specifically, I guess the...
Yes, that one lady, that donated
Henrietta
body
Henrietta Lacks. Which you see...
Wait. Let me just stop you there. You just looked that up, right?
It came up. Yeah, it's not something I just knew.
Okay, dude, because I knew about that lady, and I thought that was a reference, but
I'm familiar with it, but I couldn't just pull it out.
Yeah, that's like... I'm not being smart.
Well, just because someone pointed out that's the book she's reading later.
Oh, okay.
And there's a lot of little subtle things like that in the movie that I think is another selling point of this movie is subtle things happening they don't pay a lot of attention to, that they don't, like, underline.
Yeah.
They nod to or whatever, but... They're not like, did you get it, everybody?
Well, I thought that was kind of the female centricness of the movie was interesting. Even that, like, the kind of cancer through line is also female centric. Mm-hmm. Like, it's an oddly complete take on something that you don't see that often. Like, that's just like a thorough second, like, because that's not the main narrative of the film. Mm-hmm. But like having like side things to be like, now's a thorough secondary reading of the film is. I mean, I guess we just watch a lot of dumb movies, so it's like...
Yeah, oh, we're this, just so yeah, excited yeah, when exactly, it's yeah. anything.
I really love his reintroduction, where she's dodging going to this barbecue with one of her coworkers.
Mm-hmm. Which, okay, again, not to just like piece by piece go into everything about this movie, but like that scene, the way the movie recontextualizes that scene later on is great, because it reads so much at the beginning of just like... Okay, this is the movie giving the beat that she's still pining over a lost love, and she's awkward with this guy at work. But then later, when you find out what their whole relationship was, and you watch it again, oh, it's totally different when you see it.
Well, I mean, you know, given that this show is kind of our show is kind of based on the fact that spoilers is necessary, we can just say like, yeah, she fucked that dude.
Yeah, apparently a lot.
Yeah, and well, because she seemed to be really enjoying herself.
Mm-hmm.
And good for them, because as much as I like Poe, he doesn't look like a good lay.
Well, they were having problems.
Yeah,
not like Matt Damon in The Departed problems, but like they were strained on the relationship.
Yeah, and her and that guy, you know, remember when they were having that conversation? Like, you and me, we're wicked pisser. We should go ahead. We should do this.
Mm-hmm.
We're departed.
Yeah,
hua. I love that she's dodging this barbecue with somebody that she's fucked since her husband left. She's like, oh, I have to paint our bedroom. I mean, my bedroom. And I like that little pause because it's oh, now we've done with what I like to call efficiency. Mm-hmm. You've set up this lady.
Yeah.
We now know that she's alone. She's lost someone. You don't have to just draw out for fucking ever. This is, oh, well, it happened on November the 5th. He was on an Iraqi mission. It's just, no, I fucked up and said our, no, it's mine, go home. She's painting the bedroom. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I really understand what happened, but I like that he's just standing there looking at pictures on the bottom of the staircase, walks up, and she, I think Natalie Portman, I forget because I mostly know her from shitty movies. I forget that she's a good actress.
Yeah.
And she fucking nails that scene of her, like, that kind of shaking excitement, relief, confused, like...
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, she really did it well, because that could be such an overplayed or underplayed scene, and I think she really hit that tone perfectly, and, God, that's a great intro of just, he doesn't say anything, just walks, fuck, that's good.
I am almost always a fan, also, of when the soundtrack ends up being, no, that was on a radio, because they play that Crosby, Stills, and Nash song, which actually, if, again, on subsequent watchings, paying attention to the lyrics works well with the theme. But I was like, okay, yeah, this song. And then, like, she's listening to the radio and I immediately got happy. I don't know why that thrills me, that makes me so happy that thought went into it.
What's that? Diegetic? Is that the phrase?
Diegetic, yeah.
I know movie phrases like diegetic. You know why I know that? Because another movie podcast said it one time.
Which, speaking on the movie, or sorry, the music thing, we talked a little bit on the last episode about how the Oscars are fucking dumb. And if there's any more reason you need to believe the Oscars are dumb, the fact that this movie got nothing in the way of sound design, sound editing, not even a fucking nomination. And the sound in this movie is so great.
It won?
Bohemian Rhapsody, because they did the great thing of putting Queen songs in a movie.
Wait, this movie's from this year?
From last year, 2018.
Oh, fuck. I thought this was older than that.
No.
I thought this was like 2016 or something. Like, Oh, that's really upsetting, because I referenced the bear thing, and we're going to get to it, because that might be my favorite scene in any movie. Like, God fucking damn, that's good. But when they first, Poe starts coughing up blood, he doesn't know where he is. He refuses to answer questions about where, he's not refuses. He's like, I don't know where I was. I don't know anything. He's got this blank slate.
Yeah, he's being very cagey about where he's been.
But he's not playing it cagey. It's playing like he literally doesn't know.
Well, you don't know that. I mean, that's the thing. In terms of recontextualizing.
The acting, I meant, is played as if he doesn't know, not as if I'm a secret agent. It's played as if he's genuinely confused. Or at least even the first time I watched it, I took it as, this isn't a classified thing. This is a I literally don't know thing.
Yeah, but I guess I read more into it the second time in terms of the source of that confusion. I guess the first time I didn't, I don't want to say it was a more malignant kind of confusion, but it didn't have that same weight behind it, is when you actually know why.
Yeah. I certainly didn't like guess, but it read to me, and I think it's Oscar Isaacs being kind of brilliant.
Yeah.
It read to me as like, oh, this isn't him just like being, you know, stiff upper lip, I can't tell you about the mission kind of thing. This is like literally like, oh, this is a damaged thing. I also, on second watching, I love that he holds himself in a different bearing, and his hair, I don't know if his hair is different.
Yeah, it's a little bit more like slicked back.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to tell, because the only time you really see him, no, that's not true. I think his hair is slightly different. It's a little bit more like Pat Riley, the LA Lakers coach.
Oh, yeah, that's a reference I'm going to understand.
Yeah, that's why I'm here.
Yeah, that guy from the Lakers that are from LA, those guys playing their basketball.
Yep. He's the one that put it in the hole.
Because, again, spoilers, because it's sort of not him. I like that he carries himself acting-wise and then just, like, you know, dress-wise and, like, you know, makeup-wise. Mm-hmm. They made a kind of a conscious decision to make it slightly different, slightly more, you know, alien, not to put a pin in it. But, like, I really like that. But going with the sound design, so they basically get abducted by the government because he came home.
Yeah.
Working backwards. We're going to get to them being at Area X. But then when they first see the shimmer, the kind of distorted thunderstorm noise of the shimmer is so fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, how does that, like, because there's other sound design aspects that are amazing. But, like, just that spot of it being, like, it's not, they're playing a thunderstorm, but it's, like, run through some kind of distortion filter where it just doesn't, it sound, It sounds like a weird noise rolling over a dome of indiscriminate energy.
Yeah.
Like, if you played that for me, I'd be like, that kind of sounds like it's some kind of, like, dome-shaped, weird, like, electrical, like, yeah. Like, it's so fucking perfect.
And is this the soundtrack from Stephen King's The Dome?
I don't, seriously, like fucking Hank from Breaking Bad yeah. should be there.
No, it's absolutely great, and also, I really enjoyed the soundtrack, but in a way that I never want divorced from the movie. Like, I don't want to just buy the soundtrack and listen to it, even though some of the music is exactly the same kind of shit I listen to. It works so well in the moment
yeah.
and, like, with that feeling that I don't want to divorce it from that. It's just amazing how much it all really works together.
Well, this is, to compare to, and I hate doing the compare to last week, but I think it's so much better than Scorsese uses music, where it is just pounding over the head like, hey, this is the song that we're setting this scene to,
mm-hmm.
where this is very much like, just intrinsic to the scene. It doesn't,
yeah,
like,
well, I would say, like, less that comparison, more like the, particularly in the early 2000s, and the movie I always think of is Traffic. And then after that, like, so much soundtrack stuff became more sort of ambient background stuff. But I think this does that way better than, rather than be the sort of the Westworld, like, ominous drone thing. I think the drones in this, as weird as it is to say, I think the drones in this work better. Because they're not always just, like, portentous.
Yeah,
they're just kind of there, and it's weird. It's not always like something bad is afoot. It really helps paint the it helps add to the scene a whole lot more.
Yeah,
add to the whole feeling.
I mean, it's an overused word, but it is just atmospheric. Like,
yeah,
it feels like it's like
it's almost like that's one word to say that described everything I just said.
Yeah. But yeah, but
a smarter way to say that.
No, but that word is so overused mm-hmm. that I prefer, like, I don't want to, like, now that you've said it the good, like a longer form articulate way.
No, like, inarticulate.
It's, yeah, it's room tone. Like, it's,
yeah.
So like when we do the podcast, here's behind the scenes for the people at home is I record the room that we're in without us talking for a few seconds. If ever we have to cut out stuff and add in audio, we can kind of replace it in. So you get this kind of like, it's the tone of the room. So, mm-hmm. like, everything kind of sounds cohesive instead of, like, cutting and pacing things. This movie feels like it has, like, its chosen tone. Like, it's, like that kind of ambient rumbling sound. It's just, like, mm-hmm. it is, like, this, like, I don't want to say atmospheric, but, like, it is, like, they painted the atmosphere. But yeah. It's every scene. It's not just, well, like, this scene, it's scary monster background noise.
It's the same way, with the cinematography in this movie, is that particularly when you get in and around the shimmer, Rob Hardy is the cinematographer. He does such an amazing job because, like, how everything is blown out and colorful and kind of weird.
Yeah. It did all sound in the shimmer.
Yeah, it all makes sense.
Oh, it's not
like
Hardy,
it's not just like, wouldn't this look really cool? It does look cool, but it also services the story. I think it services the mood and the tone of the whole piece, which is great. So after they're abducted, she wakes up in Area X, and
stopping mm-hmm. you there. How do you feel about Area X as a name?
Because
this is one of the little, like, a little, and I don't have major complaints about this movie, but there's a little niggling, like, really? That's the...
Well, here's the thing. And the author of the book, Jeff Vandermeer, denies this. And I think Alex Garland denies this too, but this movie owe a lot to Tarkovsky's Stalker. And the book it was based on,
Roadside Picnic. Yeah.
Which I forget the name of the guys that wrote that. Where it's like, and they call that The Zone.
Yeah.
So
this is so fucking Roadside Picnic, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, but they're like, no, yes, it is. It's very, very, you know, like, in terms of, like, we're journeying to this weird place where shit's crazy. To me, that was just sort of this obvious connection that I just went, Area X, The Zone, fine.
Yeah.
But I agree that, like, in terms of, like, an army code name
something.
It's like, that's a little on the nose. Even if they call it, like, Area Lambda or something.
Yeah.
Anything else but X is just, like, that's a little on the nose.
Because it's Americans.
Yeah.
I think it plays different if it's translated from Russian or if it's anyway, but the American military, it would be, like, Station Jericho or something, like, you know, the walls of Jericho, the horns of Jericho, you know. Like, it'd be something along those lines. Not Area X, which is, that's where Mega Man would fight.
Well, what the whole trilogy, I guess, is called, of the books, is Southern Reach, and that's the name of the second base they go to later.
I think Southern Reach is third base.
Nicely done. but like that's a name that makes, you know, but like Area X is just like, oh cool, I'm watching an anime. Nice.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. Yeah. It's a small... I've never had to do this with a movie before. I'm having to find the little things to pick out because, this movie will turn
Thank
into...
Thank God you are.
But this whole conversation would be like, I really like that part.
Yeah.
Hey, there's another part I really like. Hey, you know what I like? That part that happened after what I liked previously.
What, on that same topic, let me bring up, and not just in this movie, but just in general, how stoked I am that Jennifer Jason Leigh is, back in movies. I hadn't seen her for a super long time, and then all of a sudden she's in The Hateful Eight, she's in Good Time, she's in the third season of Twin Peaks, she's in this. She is so amazing, and what she's doing with that character is so weird, but not in the Eddie Redmayne, what the hell are you doing thing, but in this very compelling way.
I really like her in this movie, and this is going to go to a vast blind spot in my movie knowledge. I don't really know who Jennifer Jason Leigh is. She's an 80s person, right?
She was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, I've never seen.
I have seen, but I don't really... I'm not, super...
But, so more in the 90s, you got your single white female with Bridget Fonda.
I know the movie. Never saw it.
Hudsucker Proxy.
Oh, I did see that. I didn't realize who that was. Okay.
Yeah. And Rush, a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, I didn't see. She's one of those people that just... I missed, I think... what she's famous for. And I knew she was
Existence.
Yeah, never saw it. There's a lot of, because I looked at her IMDb, because it's that's that lady, I know her name, but inexplicably have never seen any of her.
But Jennifer Jason Leigh is, weird, melancholy, detached, sort of bitter. I don't even know how to really describe what she's doing.
Yeah, she's got this weird kind of low energy fidgety, which is something you don't see a lot. She's always playing with her pen or like messing with something in her hand or like snapping her finger.
Because that character could very easily be more like a more hyper version of not Anya. That is Anya. Anya is a paramedic character.
Yeah.
This more just but even the more like militarized, let's pack up and move, people. Let's go, know-it-all person in charge. And she brings to that this sort of weird vulnerability by being that aloof. You don't really understand what's going on, but you also get the sense that not everything's cool with her.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Not in this, dark way, but just are you okay?
Yeah, they do a good job of, painting that out where there's this exposition scene, and this is not the most articulate part of the film, but where I think it's Cassie... it's like, hey, come over, meet my friends or whatever. And then there's this she lost her daughter. She got divorced. She's this.
Well, a little bit later on.
There's this I actually don't mind it, but that's pretty clunky. But they do put the kind of a pin on it. It's like, well, what's Ventress's deal? And they're like, I don't know. She's just, and when you get the reveal later that she's had cancer and that was her, reason for going into into the Shimmer. Cool. I like it.
Yeah.
But that I think I liked it a little bit better as her just being aloof. I needed an answer.
She also a little bit earlier on kind of does the thing of I'm the one that picks the teams and they go in there and then they all die.
I did basically. Like that. Yeah.
That she's so she's kind of over it, but this is her job, She's just dead inside somewhat because of that. So when they enter the Shimmer, this is one thing that I kind of a little nitpick with the movie. When they finally enter into the Shimmer, it just, you get a title card that says The Shimmer, and then Natalie Portman has this flashback to her fucking the guy, and then she wakes up in a tent, and it's revealed that none of them remember they remember entering The Shimmer, and then that's it. And it's been 4 days they've determined from their ration usage.
Yeah.
That does a good job of setting up it's going to get weird and dreamlike here because rules don't really apply, but that time skip thing never really comes up again in a really meaningful way. I feel like I say meaningful a lot, but in another way. So it kind of feels like this gimmick that was sort of moved past or kind of half forgotten, but it still does the job of setting things up that it's weird in here.
Well, I think they sort of pay it off at the end where when she's kind of the last one left, she kind of we kind of cut to her just standing on the beach.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get to the very end yet, but I think that's supposed to be a time jump. I think it's just kind of assumed that there's time jumps. So that's the only time they put a pin in it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit during the whole altercation with her and the thing at the end too. There's a couple of moments where you're not sure how much time has passed.
Yeah. So this is where they get to the flooded house section with the alligator.
Oh, right. Yeah. I was thinking of a different house.
Where are they? I know in the show, but did they establish geographic? In my head, it's are they in Florida? Where
I want to say,
we just not know.
I think they say I want to say like they're in the Carolinas somewhere. I think they say it, but I might just be reading something about it.
All right. Yeah. I didn't pick up.
Could not tell you.
It's not like it matters, but like that one scene is like very Florida-y. And I mean, I don't care, yeah. But it just.
You Southern know, honestly, Reach, I never even thought about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if Southern Reach is like, oh, does that mean it's like, you know, the South? Or is it like, yeah. You know, anyway, it just. And
man, I hope not. I just hate the idea of anything interesting happening in Florida.
No, but it's good because everybody dies, which is nice.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fine.
So they're in this flooded house, which I don't understand why it's happening. So they're there, they're looking at it, and they see the first first reference point where they describe the mutations that are happening inside of the Shimmer, which I really like. The it's on the nose, but I think it's somewhat slow played at the same time, where she's looking at this this tree with a bunch of branches, and there's different kinds of flowers budding from the same branch, and it looks like the flowers are kind of melded together. It's like, this is weird. Oh, and they have this great line, like, oh, it looks like someone's setting up for a wedding.
Yeah.
Which I like, because I do like the kind of subtle side thing of this, where, like, it's played like a horror movie for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But it also could be like, this is the Garden of Eden. Like, this is a rebirth. Like,
yeah.
Like, there's this other kind of coin to it. And I like that it, like, oh, this literally looks like an Indian wedding. Like, I mean, it's this beautiful flowery inlay.
Yeah. Without going too much on a tangent here, I think there is, that is a theme of the movie and a reading of it about the sort of the beauty and destruction, or the beauty and that can come out of that. Like, when later they come across the guy that's been completely destroyed in the pool.
Yeah.
Whatever's happened to that guy is rad looking, you know, yeah. And in this very awful way, but it's still just beautiful.
Now, I am not, and this is so weird for me to say this, I'm going to make a video game reference here.
Mm-hmm.
Does this movie predate The Last of Us?
No.
Because the way that the things interact with them reminds me of the parasites from The Last of Us, where they'll just be like dead bodies kind of with it like growing out, like mm-hmm. laying on the wall or whatever.
Yeah.
And it just was like, oh, I've seen this before, which I've played 4 video games since 1996. Yeah. So it's just weird for me to have a video game reference in my head. So,
but it's also, it's been in other things too. I mean, obviously Aliens, that sort of,
you know, I've never seen an Alien thing. Movie.
Yeah. Oh no, yeah. You should. They're pretty good.
Like any of them. Yeah. I've seen all.
Light through my teeth on that one episode.
I've seen all of Alf. And uh-huh. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really, they're all basically the same. Which reminds me, because the person that reads that line is Tessa Thompson, who I don't know if this was just in a conversation that we've had or if I actually said on the podcast, that I'm kind of not sure if I actually like as an actress. But in this movie, I thought she did a really good job, because I feel like she traditionally gets a lot of like shitty roles. And having her play something a little bit different than what I've normally seen, like she's so reserved and inward here. And again, very vulnerable. And I thought she did that really well.
Yeah, she's good in this. I like her a lot, but this is the first time I like her as an actress. I like her as like a, I mean, there needs to be another term.
Mm-hmm.
I like her in her superhero right. role, but this, like, here I like her as acting as an art. Like, mm-hmm. just like, oh, wow, she really, like, this is something different. Right. Like,
it's like when you see, like, Charlize Theron is fine in things. But, like, you see a movie like Monster, and you're like, oh, my God, you're actually, like, a really good actress. Yeah. And not to just focus on women, but that was just the first thing that came to my mind.
Well, I mean, it's I think focusing on women kind of makes sense in this context, where, because they're also played up of, like, I think Tessa Thompson is fucking gorgeous. Like, mm-hmm. I like her as Valkyrie is like, that's like kind of the best looking person I've ever seen. So like a lot of women are played up as like, oh, look, it's just this is attractive set dressing.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So to see attractive set dressing, be like, oh, you're a fully formed, talented person yeah. with like range.
You're given the chance to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Which is nice. And in this movie, it was, you know, because it's not like I thought, you know, I didn't not think she had range, but it was nice mm-hmm. to see her be like, oh yeah, because while watching it, it wasn't like, oh yeah, that's Valkyrie from Thor. Like, it was just, you know, this is a weird kind of delicate, awkward woman. And
you get her generally playing a lot more sort of like powerful roles. Yeah. And it's sort of like, it's just nice to see when that kind of has an archetype of roles they just keep playing, be able to do something else and do it well.
Yeah. They're in the frozen thing and they get attacked by the gator. This is one of my other kind of little tiny nitpicks. Mm-hmm. Really, a giant alligator pulls you by the backpack?
Yeah.
That's, I get they're doing like a horror movie trope thing where you get pulled from off frame, like, but that didn't really sit well with me.
I don't know. I don't know how noisily alligators exit.
No, it's not the noise. It's why would it jump up and only get you from the backpack?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like it's just mm-hmm. that's effortful. And the only plus to that effort is that it looks cool on film.
But I like that in this movie, the sort of action pieces, I guess I'll call them that, aren't. You know, like, there's a lot of, like, she's just talking and then she gets pulled back into the doorway. And it's not like all of a sudden the whole style of the movie changes and it's all these, like, quick cuts. Things are a little bit faster, but it's not like, here's an action scene, everyone, now we go back to the movie. It feels very, like, fit in
to
everything.
Yeah, and they're not overly done action scenes. It's not like this 10-minute thing of, like, oh, now her arm's all ripped up and she's, like, crawling and she's going to kill an alligator with her last breath with a knife.
It feels I think if you did that, it'd be a little bit more video gamey, and I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah, I think they really did walk a line there because this movie could have gone bad really quick.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a, and not to keep harping on about, like, oh, there's ladies in this movie, but, like, I think if it was men in this role, it would have, I mean, I guess you see it in the, when you watch the video that we're going to get to in a second, but it would just be this kind of like, ooh, let's kill all the bad things.
Right.
And it would just be much, much more boring.
Well, particularly because they are the military, you know, it's like, this is almost, I mean, there's, certainly a parallel to The Thing in terms of it's a group of people that are scientists that are forced to confront this thing rather than a bunch of trained military professionals. Granted, those people also had a flamethrower. And I guess MacReady was more Kurt Russell's character than The Thing.
Oh, you mean the remake. Sorry, I only watched originals.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what I was referring to, was the remake.
Yeah, the remake of The Thing. Yeah, I mean, it is the remake. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, I guess it is. Yeah. Sorry, I'm being a pedantic asshole. But yeah, I'm thinking of the later 2000s.
No, I meant the original movie, The Thing. The terrible,
I forgot that existed.
No, the terrible 1950s movie that no one...
Where it's a carrot that comes to life.
Yeah, no one has ever referenced as the original, but I'm Alex on this show, so I say things like that. I'm not like this in real
life,
people.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. Also, that's never been said about me in real life either. All right, so they kill the gator, and I cannot tell you how much I love the design of the gator's throat, where it's those, like, rows of teeth like a shark.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just, one, it's beautiful design, but two, oh, would you like some nightmare fuel? Here, why don't you just put some octopus tentacles on the end? They can fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, that is, oh, God, I love that. I also love that small bead of, she's looking down the thing's throat, and they're like, this thing's mouth is really heavy.
Yeah, I'm just holding it open, yeah.
Dumb moment, but I needed a human moment right there.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but I needed a human moment. And this movie provided it. And it's like, oh, I'm in the hands of someone I trust as a movie maker.
Right. Well, it's also, I mean, the same thing where it's like I can't compare it to the books. I haven't read the book. But the fact that it is just, no, here's an alligator. It's kind of weird colored. Oh, it also has more teeth. It's not like, yeah, here's a mouthful of tentacles. Isn't this so crazy that a lot of things are just off. And it takes a while for things to really kind of ramp up as you get closer to the lighthouse, which I always enjoyed that kind of gradation.
The only we could talk about it, I suppose, because it doesn't really fit. But like, so they are heading towards the lighthouse. That is their end point of the journey.
Yeah, because we've seen at the beginning of the film when the credits come up, a asteroid or something hitting the lighthouse over a sweet folk soundtrack.
This, I don't know if I can complain about this. But
I believe in you.
It's more that it's my fault, but it feels too Stephen King-y, like the Dark Tower kind of thing of like this. I mean, I guess it's earlier than that. Like, I mean, it goes to like, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien or whatever, but like the lighthouse as like this thing to go to.
Yeah.
Just has this, like, it just got the stink of Stephen King on it. And I think it's because of the Dark Tower, but like, there's just something about it that just, that kind of, I don't want to use MacGuffin, but like that sort of like so obvious of an endpoint.
Right.
It sits a little uncomfortable. And in a book, maybe it wouldn't bother me as much, but like it's just,
I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. I don't, it didn't bother me, but I completely understand what you're
like
saying.
Yeah, it's like in a video game where we're like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you gotta go to the lighthouse.
Right.
Or like, yeah, But anyway, so they're there. Giant alligator, mutant teeth, kills them. They cut back to Area X in the interrogation thing. And this is the first shot you get to see of Natalie Portman with the shut up to everybody that I'm the way I pronounce it, the Ouroboros tattoo.
Yeah. How are you supposed to say it?
I don't know.
I always thought it was Ouroboros.
I think it is, but it's one of those words I've only read in my head.
Ouroboros.
Well, I think it could be like there's
yeah
I went to
there's your warm-up game
I went to I went to dictionary.com to find out how it's pronounced, because it is one of those words that I've avoided saying out loud my whole life because I've only known it from books.
It's like when I found out that it's not detrius, it's detritus. Like I was saying detrius for years and no one stopped me.
Yeah, I think a lot of people say that. I think I may even say that. You see the Ouroboros tattoo, which I can't tell you how much I love that as a thing in this movie.
Yeah.
That there's this weird tattoo as a, not as a virus, but like that is like the visual representation of like DNA change.
Yeah.
It's like your name DNA change, like they're kind of melding into each other, because it's this part of the movie where they go, they find this, the old Southern Reach headquarters. Mm-hmm. And they find that body we were talking about, like the one from Last of Us.
Yeah.
And when he's stuck to the wall, you can see that he's got this Ouroboros tattoo.
And it spends no time on it.
No, it's just not.
The only thing you get, really, is after the alligator attack, they're rowing to the place and getting some character building between her and that lady.
Cassie,
I think his name. And she's like, oh, I got this bruise on my arm. That must be from the gator. And then later she just has this tattoo. And again, it doesn't spend any significant amount of time with this tattoo. But it is like things are getting weird. That bodies are morphing.
Oh, it's so good, and I also love that it's. And again, they don't point it out. Is my main adoration, because if they even said anything about it, all of this turns the other way. I couldn't hate it more if they said it out loud.
And I think even earlier in the movie, she kind of looks at it or something.
That's fine.
Again, it's barely noticeable.
But I love that, because the idea. And this plays into, like, when we meet Oscar Isaacs in the beginning, where it's not actually him. It's the other guy kind of having turned into him after a fashion, where they're, like, their memories are coming with it. So, like, I like that she wouldn't go, oh, I didn't used to have a tattoo. Like, what's coming along with it is, like, not necessarily the memory of being a soldier with a tattoo, but, like, that's how deep this kind of melding is going.
Yeah.
That it's not... It's not strange. Like, that's not, because if that happened to either one of us, like John has a nibbler tattoo from Futurama.
Mm-hmm.
If after hanging out with you for a while, which I've hung out with you for many years, if I start seeing a nibbler tattoo show up on my arm, you and I would never talk about anything else to anybody else for fucking months.
Yeah.
And but because this is the way the movie is, it's kind of dream logic. It's not pointed out. You know, it's just kind of like that's the way your head is. Again, subtlety in this movie. God, I like subtlety.
Yeah, no, it's great.
It's so nice to see subtlety.
What it is, it's a movie that trusts its audience.
It's
a movie that knows, like, that has faith in you to get it. Even if you don't, like, it's going to give you enough stuff to get you at that same point where it needs you to go. This is some stuff on the side, too. But it also just has enough faith in you, which is such a pleasant change from so many of the stuff that we've watched and so much modern entertainment.
Well, to go back to – and I hate – again, I don't like doing this, but going back to last episode, The Departed, where I was so fucking confused by the end of that movie. And the audience reached out and has talked to me about it, about how funny they found about my finding the ending of that movie confusing. Yeah. And you made fun of me as well.
Yes, still do.
But that's what I'm saying, like, the difference between that and Interstellar. I still say the end of Interstellar makes more sense than the end of The Departed. And this movie is so much more confusing than The Departed. But it makes sense intrinsically.
Yes.
So you're allowed to follow it. Well, The Departed just doesn't. It's not... It's narratively crappy.
Yeah, this is going to be a very awkward way to say this, and I think I brought this up before, where it's like with like David Lynch movies, for me it's like I don't walk out of a David Lynch movie going like I get it, but I feel like everything I need is there.
Yeah.
But I also don't feel like it's a specific puzzle box in terms of like it's absolutely this. You know what I mean? And I think that this movie does that same kind of thing where it's like, we've given you everything you need and you can put together the plot of the movie fine. But what was it all about? You, the audience, you figure that out.
Yeah, and I love that so much more because when it lands perfectly. Like, but like with The Departed, where it doesn't land, like the plot doesn't make sense.
I mean, The Departed like needs to be a plot heavy movie.
No, but still, but like it's just the plot doesn't make sense. So it's like you failed on a fundamental level about kind of the end of that movie, where this one, even though the plot makes probably less sense in this, but it doesn't need to land. And I don't know. I just think there's like an important kind of like differentiation between like, I think this is kind of the art I like. I like his other movie, Ex Machina.
Which I still haven't seen.
I'm not to give away details, but like you're left with there are different ways to kind of read the film.
Mm-hmm.
much like in the same way as this. And you're left with this, like, this pleasant, you watched a movie, you saw it A to B, the entire thing made sense.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, there could be arguments to be made about what you just watched. And it's, I'm being a pretentious cunt today, but no. I'm saying it again, is this goes back to where my novel Periphery. That's the, I wrote my book that way.
Available on Amazon.
Yeah, available on Amazon. But I made it a point of having, there's multiple ways to read it. And like, I could have an argument with somebody that read it that has a different read of it. And mm-hmm. I wrote the fucking thing. I've had someone give me a different read and I'm like, oh shit, that actually makes more sense than what I was thinking. I didn't say that part out loud.
Yeah.
But it's, and, well, and I think that's, I, to me, that's the joy of like something like that, where it's like the subtle storytelling instead of the over top. So either go super over the top or go subtle. And this one nails subtle so well.
Well, it's appropriate to this movie. I always think about a story my dad told me about 2001, that he and a friend of his were traveling in London when they saw 2001, and the movie ended, and they had this huge long conversation about it afterwards that was so long and so intense or whatever, that when it ended, they were like, oh, we have no idea where we are now. They were just walking and talking, and then awesome. They just went like, yeah. We have completely gone off the map of what we're used to. Crap, where are we?
That's great. Yeah.
And I love movies like that. Even if something's bad, as we try to do on the show with, I think, varying degrees of success, but there are certain movies that are like, I know I specifically brought up in The Invitation, where it's like, it didn't work for me, but here's why. And it's interesting to talk about because here's all the stuff that did work versus something like Reign of Fire, where it's like, this is just stupid.
Yeah.
Why are we bothering? But a movie worth talking about is worth seeing, I think. And I think this is definitely, I think, worth seeing for any number of reasons, but it's also worth talking about a lot, which I think was the absolute inverse of my point, which thematically works with this movie.
You just blew my fucking mind, yeah. Man. Let's get back to the thing. The Ouroboros tattoo, they basically set up that, like, they find the remnants of the past crew that went through and
yeah.
They got killed. We don't need to focus on that.
But that moment, well, I do want to focus on one particular moment.
Oh, please.
Because it starts, she has not told them that Oscar Isaac is her husband.
Oh, I don't want you to focus on that, though.
Yeah.
So let's just move on.
But
anyway, so I was
but they find this the card they find from the previous people that left for them. It says to those who follow. And it's a scene. And I love how this is put together because it's just lit with like a flashlight.
I forgot this happened now.
Talk where about that. Where it's a scene. Talk about it. Where,
sorry. I thought that we watched this movie. I thought we watched the movie you're about to bring up later.
Yeah, no, it's when they get to the second or the Southern Reach. It's not explained what's going on. It's just Oscar Isaacs and he's talking to some other guy who's kind of being held down. He's like, you ready? He's like, yeah. And he just cuts into his stomach.
Yeah.
Like deep. And they like pull back his stomach to reveal like, his intestines are writhing, and it is just upsetting. He puts his hand under one to show you how it's moving. And I like, again, kind of going to the whole cancer theme, like Anya, the paramedic, is like, nope, trick of the light. They all just went insane.
I love that.
That part. Like that denial of what you're experiencing, that like, nope. And she's the only one that is viscerally like, no, screw this. Everyone else is just kind of like taken aback in horror, but she is. In
it's
denial,
like that
for
internet
sure.
phrase, nope the fuck out.
Yeah.
She just, but yeah. she can't leave, but she nopes the fuck out.
Yeah.
Just, nope, trick of the light. Yeah, that's a beautiful moment. I think the character work in this is, or the writing of it's really well done, of like differentiating the people there where everybody kind of accepts everything in a slightly different way. This is a very kind of fifth grade point, but you don't see it often where generally it's, if it's a group of four people together, they all react the same way.
Right.
Or there'll be like one person that's the bad guy.
Yeah.
You rarely see like there's different levels of completely freaking the fuck out. And she completely freaks the fuck out.
Too many movies have scenes where everyone lowers their sunglasses at once and goes, damn. And I'm glad they didn't do that in this one.
I mean, let me disagree with you a little bit, because I would like to see all of them as they get closer and closer together, their DNA is being bounced back and forth. Mm-hmm. They all kind of look at the camera, double finger snap point and go, damn.
Yeah.
And that would be nice.
That
like,
would be
just,
something.
Just
a little,
be like they're like maybe nice. Like open like a Miller, you know, we could have that tie-in.
Uh-huh.
You know, because there's good money in beer, you know.
Yeah. But maybe slightly off because they're not fully in sync. So it's like pop, 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 pop. Damn.
Exactly.
And then, yeah.
And, you know.
And then they go, twins.
No. And then they when they finally get to the light tower, they go, dilly, dilly.
Yes.
And then the light, that's the shimmer turns out.
I would
to
enjoy
be,
that immensely.
You know, I was joking when I said it, but because I've said this before, I would love to have beauty destroyed. If something this beautiful and this well articulated as a film, at the end of it, turns into a fucking Coors commercial, yeah. I would never be happy. Like, I would, all I would talk about for the rest of my life is how great that movie is. And, like, it's, oh my God. I would
or when he's, debriefing her and it's like, what did it want? She's like, I don't know. It's, you know, I'm not even sure it knew I was there. Where it's, instead it's like, what did it want? The taste of a new generation. Yeah. Pepsi.
What did it want? Just ends. Flaming hot Cheetos. Yeah. So, yeah, there's the bodies being turned into weird.
I don't even know. That thing is exploded. It rules.
Well, yeah. All right. So we're going to talk about, because I think we need to, once we're done with it, we're going to talk about what the fuck we think this movie is. So basically, fast forward, they're on watch because they realize that, well, the place they're at is unsafe.
Mm-hmm. And that the people there before were on watch. So why not us be on watch? I like when movies can get away with doing this, where essentially Jennifer Jason Leigh gives, gives sort of the thesis statement of the movie in terms of, like, Natalie Portman, she says to Natalie Portman, how, like, you didn't mention that Kane is your husband. And they're talking a little bit, and then she gets into how you're not, like, self-destructive. You're not suicidal. You're self-destructive. We all are in this way. And that's sort of the natural, like, the drive to create and destroy. Yeah. And I even think, does she even say, or no, when she says annihilation, that's later. But she basically just gives the thesis that, like, she lays it all out in just in a few lines of dialogue. But it's done expertly enough that it doesn't feel like the movie's going, you get it, dummies?
Well, I like where this also, the two threads of, because they're talking about, because she talks to Ventress about why her husband went in. Mm-hmm. This is also when we realize that she was fucking around behind her husband's back.
Yeah.
And I do like the kind of her also realizing that he went in because the husband found out. Like,
that. Well, and that's particularly interesting because when they, I don't know if it's in this scene or when she's talking to Benedict Wong or earlier, where when they ask why she went in, she goes, I owed it to him. Like, I owe it to him. Not I love him, but I owe it to him. And so you get that sense of, like, the guilt, like, pushing her forward rather than just, like, this, again, that sort of making fun of the, like, I'm pining over these self-same stars.
Yeah.
It's about her.
There's an interesting thing where this character is not, it's not like a flawed character. It's like, I think if we hung out with her, we wouldn't like her very much. Like, she's kind of a jerk.
Who, Natalie Portman?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, jerk's probably the wrong thing, but, like, it's not, she's not a, this perfect, she's not a Mary Sue kind of, what's that called? Mary Sue? Is that
Mary Sue's thing. Yeah. Yeah. She's a damaged person, but in a way that we all are. Yeah. Not in this very, like, you see her struggling in these conversations, like, with that particular guy talking about the bedroom or whatever, but you get no sense that, like, her whole life is destroyed without this guy. Like, she's carrying on, but she still holds this guilt. Yeah.
No, but
it's a very human character.
But I also like that, like, because Oscar Isaac and her are shown to have this wonderful relationship, and then she's banging around behind him. Like,
but you see it deteriorate. Again, that meeting out of information, like, you're seeing it kind of like, because he's gone all the time on these army things.
Yeah, I just thought that it's an interesting kind of take on a character where she's our lead character being not perfect. Again, I watch too many superhero movies.
Yeah.
Let's get to the bear.
Yes.
How about you talk about the bear, John? Bring us to the bear.
So one of the Cassie, I believe, is while they're doing watch, they realize that the fence has been torn through, and when everyone is roused to find out what's going on, Cassie is taken away by some unseen figure. But, like, I don't understand. I kind of don't understand why Natalie Portman is looking for her later. I mean, like, I get in terms of, like, she cares about the character, but it doesn't matter. It's not that big of a deal. But it was something on my subsequent watchings of it that I was like, wait.
Well, I think it was this kind of desperate thing of, because they hadn't lost anybody yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just like, she could be alive. And it was
it's fine. It's not like, but like that, you get that great moment where she, when looking for the character, where she sees the two deer that have, like, tree branches for antlers. Yeah. And again, like a beautiful moment in the movie anyway, but also a nice sort of reoccurrence of the theme of, like, echoes and doubling and that you get throughout. But, she finds Cassie. She's been mauled by whatever this thing is, and she's dead, and they push on, and they end up in, like, they start figuring out, they end up in this, like, town, basically, that was right around there, or something, some place where people lived, where there's all these, like, plants grown up to look like people, and they which is beautiful. Like, all the plants are growing over things. And I didn't realize until the second watching that the house they go into looks like her house from the outside.
I didn't notice that on both watchings. That's one of the things I saw referenced when I was reading about the movie.
Yeah. And so they're staying at this house. They're inside the camp there. That's when Radic, I think her name is, the Tess Thompson character, realizes that, like, well, you're going to find you're going to find Hox genes in the plant. And Hox genes are the genes that you have that's like the body.
Yeah, it's like the blueprint.
How your body's built. And so you're getting the sense that everything's getting mushed up.
That's a much more scientific way of saying
it. Yeah, I'm sorry, refracted.
Yes. I believe you mean ribonucleic acid.
and this was also a moment that I really liked, where that night Natalie Portman is like looking at her own blood in a microscope and sees that she's got whatever it is.
Yeah.
And like she pushes the thing away. And again, it's not this huge moment in the movie, but it's just this personal, she's upset by it.
It's really nice too, because it's not like, I don't know how visually you'd show it, but it's not like it's like, the cells have evil clown masks on or something. Yeah. Like, I don't know what I'm looking at there, but like,
yeah, it's the just, point it's, gets across it's beautiful anyway. And rainbow colored. It's not red and evil. But she is woken up in the middle of the night by Anya, who has looked at her necklace and has figured out that Kane is her husband. The guy they saw in the video is her husband, and has tied up her Radix in Ventress because she doesn't know who's. She's also kind of losing her mind because she's seen her fingerprints kind of get all spirally.
We should stop here just for real quick. I don't know if you've done acid. I'm pretty sure you have, but I don't know if you want to admit that on air.
Sure.
This is such an acidy thing right there, where your finger, but also like the your guts feeling like worms kind of thing. Of like, I'm dumb, but it took me that long in the movie to be like, oh, this is very, very acid trippy, and maybe that's another reading of the film that this is like a.
It's certainly trippy, yeah.
But it just reminded me of like the swirling, but also like, you know, your friend that can't handle their acid starts freaking the fuck out. And yeah. That's exactly what Anya is going through.
Yeah, and she doesn't. She's like, you know, what is this about? Or, you know, is this some kind of setup? Why didn't you keep the truth from me? And then they hear in the distance this weird distorted, help me.
God, John, it sounds I love this so much.
Like Cassie. Oh. And then it turns out it's this evil fucking bear.
Well, Anya runs off and goes, Cassie, I'm going to help you.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then basically she gets thrown, like fucking a bear just starts walking through the room, crashes through the thing. And they're all trying to stay calm as shit.
Not just any bear.
Like this, I mean, this bear, it's like, what would you say? Like 6 foot tall. It's wearing like a bow tie. It's looking for picnic. But wait, no, that's what I watched afterwards.
Different bear.
Sorry. This giant fucking bear. And it's got like a skull face.
Yeah.
Like, and it's almost like a bear anteater hybrid kind of. It's fucking, it looks like prehistoric bear, like some kind of like remnant thing. And instead of like growling, it opens its mouth and in the voice of Cass from the bear's mouth here, oh God, help me.
Yeah.
Like this. Oh fuck. That's good.
Yeah.
Like, this movie should win every award ever just for that scene. Motherfucker.
It's very tense how it's put there, and the bear is just sniffing around them and, like, just making that noise. And actually, my favorite moment is when, right before the action, like, really kicks off, it's, like, smelling around Tess Thompson's character and then just bites into her shoulder. And it's not, like, a vicious attack. It's just like, chomp, the way you would, like, an apple or whatever.
And it's yelling in their friend's voice in its face, this dead bear face is yelling with it.
Yeah. Oh, and then Anya comes back in and with a gun and shoots them, and they all kind of get free. They end up defeating the bear. But that's when it kind of hit me that this movie is sort of a Buddhist nightmare. It's like, what if you became one with everything? Like, and it's not great.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. And they even bring up like the, what if the last thing that's left of you is your pain? And that is absorbed by another bear, yeah.
But oh God, that bear scene is so beautiful. Like I don't know.
We're not going to do it any justice, like trying to describe it. Like it's just very, very effectively done.
I don't know the audience, metrics or whatever, but I know Steph Quick doesn't watch a lot of the movies we've watched, but like if you can just watch this scene, like, oh God, I can't stress enough how fucking good that scene is. But anyway.
What I like though is the special effects supervisor for the movie, who just like, I don't normally call this out, but Andrew Whitehurst, the effects of this movie are so great. Like, and I don't normally, you know, praise CG like this, but they're so, it's so great. Like, it does what it sets out to do very effectively, and it's not just the Marvel style of bullshit. Yeah. But Andrew Whitehurst, the effects supervisor, they, I guess the same people that worked on this, some of the same, that same crew worked on Paddington. Because Paddington is named after a lovely tube stop or something like that. They chose a shitty tube stop named Homerton, and that's what they called the bear.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, so they kill the bear. Ventress decides to, like, they're all like, we want to leave, blah, blah, blah. Ventress is like, fuck this, I'm going to the lighthouse. Next day, Tessa Thompson, she's talking to Natalie Portman and still kind of in freak-out mode. And she's like, well, I mean, you think that the choice is either the fight or flee, and I think there might be another choice. And as she's talking, you see her skin starts getting little, like, shoots coming out of it.
Yeah, because she's a cutter, as you find out, like, from those wounds, like, little...
Yeah, like, little branches start coming out. You see her, like, kind of, like, spacing out a little bit and starting to walk away. And now the woman's like, where are you going? And you see her walk, turn around a corner. And, like, by the time she turns the corner, there's just this field of those, you know, figures.
Flower people.
But, like, you know, she's gone. So she's turned into it. And it's like this, oh, is there communication with this? Like, can you control the mutation? Like,
I didn't know if that was that moment, if that's what was happening. It's just Radic, not Radix. I'm adding an apostrophe to it or S to it.
I think you added an X to it, actually.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I made it cool. Or if it was like a time skip. You know what I mean? Like, if it was...
Oh, okay.
You know, it's just... In the terms of horror movie logic, though, it totally is fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you're dealing... And this is the thing I was thinking about, where it's so much of... I've, you know, complained on this show before and certain things about not being, like, well-defined or whatever. But in this movie, that's sort of the point. Is that you're dealing with this alien thing that I don't think they abuse that in any way. I think it all still sort of logically makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, like weird things happen like that. Or when later when the mirror image sort of like disappears and then reappears. Some of that sort of time shifting or the spatial shifting, I think still makes sense in the logic of the whole thing. But whatever the reasoning is, whatever happened, it works and is very upsetting.
So she becomes Plant Lady, which I love. And I also, and this is a small, stupid thing, but I very much enjoy that they don't deal with the kind of pedantry that I would come up with. Like, what happened to her necklace? What happened to her clothes?
Right.
Why isn't it? Like, it's just, it's small and stupid, but like, I like that that wasn't, like, you don't see shoes on the ground or like a plant with a shirt on or like, I think the worst offender would have been a plant with a necklace hanging over it or something.
Yeah.
They just leave, like, it's, again... It's dumb, but it's dream logic. It's dumb on my part, I should say, like to expect that. I a lot of lesser movies do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, this is basically, this is getting to our end set piece is she decides to go to the lighthouse. Yeah. One of the things that happens in the lighthouse, which is somewhat annoying, she's on the beach. Mm-hmm. She sees the lighthouse. She's like, oh, I'm going to go over to the lighthouse. Takes her backpack off and leaves it there.
Mm-hmm.
She's fucking ages for the lighthouse. Why take your backpack off there?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's one of these things that happens in a lot of movies that, like, and it's not the movie's fault. This is my fault because I'm lazy and don't like camping. But it's like, you gotta walk all the way back over there, pick up your backpack.
Yeah.
Like, what, just walk into the front door, lady.
That just makes me think of, there was that show Survivor Man. The whole thing was the guy reenacts survivor
Les
situations.
Stroud.
Yeah, and he like films himself doing it, and the only one I ever watched was he's supposed to be like, what if you crash your plane like in the Arctic or something like that, and he was talking about how you realize every scene you see of me walking with me and my sled, I have to come back and get the camera. This is so tiring, and I hate this so much. But one thing I liked, again, doesn't explain it, and I don't think needs to. What the hell is going on that beach in front of the lighthouse? What is with the bones laid out?
Yeah,
like there's not an explanation for that. Like, I don't know, is that Oscar Isaac and his people going crazy and setting that up? Because what's going on? But it sets this tone and this mood that fits everything else that you're just, okay.
I just have one small thing, because this is my complaint of the film, of actual, like, editing-wise, because I think this movie is expertly edited. There's one last flashback to her and Oscar Isaac's in the house, and the entire flashback is her going, hey, and him going, hey.
Yeah.
And then they cut back to inside the Shimmer. That I just, that was very awkward.
I loved it because it is, it to me was that quiet, for as much as like everything else is heightened, like you're like, oh my God, she's at the lighthouse, all this stuff. The quiet dissolution of their relationship, of their marriage. Because you've already gotten the scene of him leaving, because it's kind of told out of order. When he leaves to go do army stuff, and you find out in the Shimmer, that's very weird between them. It's a little icy, particularly on his part. But that little moment of it's just that, and for how close they were, now they're just like reading books next to each other, and it's just like, hey, that there's still something there, but it also just feels a little strained. I like that. I like that quiet counterpoint. But I understand your point. Yeah, it worked.
It just sat weird in the, because I like, because tonally, Tessa Thompson becoming a plant, I thought calmed us back down.
Uh-huh.
Because like that's this weird sedate kind of beautiful shot, and then gets us to the beach. It just them being like, hey, it doesn't matter. All right,
but I understand what you're saying.
We're at the final thing that around the lighthouse there are crystal trees.
Yeah,
which are really cool looking, and then there's the layout of all the skeleton bodies.
Mm-hmm.
There's skeleton moons. She goes inside the lighthouse, and there's like a Tibetan monk sitting in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And a hole.
Right. When he says Tibetan monk, he means a clearly immolated body.
Yes. Well, I mean, come on. People know.
No, I don't trust our audience. Well, I don't trust that we have an audience. Let me put it that way.
I'm much more like, the writers of this film, where I trust our audience.
Uh-huh.
In a lighthouse, she sees, there's an immolated man. And there's a video recorder standing mm-hmm. there. And she plays the video. And who is it?
Who?
Kane Wise.
Oh, no. Sounds like canine.
Yeah. He says, check out my hover rollerblades, baby. I came from space. What if that's actually the beginning of this movie? It was Kane Wise crash landed through that lighthouse. And that's actually...
That would make both movies so much better.
So here's what the video says. And this is a very, very loose quotation of what happened, because I don't type very fast and I wasn't going to read... But the video is him looking into camera. It says, I thought I was a man. I had a life. People called me Kane. Now I'm not so sure. If I wasn't Kane, then what was I? Was I you? Were you me? My flesh moves like liquid. My mind is cut loose. I can't bear it. I can't bear it. And he says, have you ever seen a phosphorus grenade go off? It's very bright. Blah, blah, blah. And you see him self-immolate using a phosphorus grenade. Very cool scene. Made better by Oscar Isaac walking out from behind the camera.
Yeah.
But it's Oscar Isaac with the more severe haircut that we met earlier in the film. And it's, whoa, holy shit.
Yeah.
Ouroboros tattoo. Like, this shit it finally wrapped around on itself. Like, this is snake biting its own tail. I don't remember what happens after this.
Oh, it only gets better because she's like,
I mean,
like,
I do, but I blown away by that.
But then she hears like Ventress, Jennifer Jason Leigh, like mumbling through the hole. So she goes to investigate and sees what's down the hole and goes in this whole like H.R. Geiger kind of center of the universe thing. Like, I don't even know how to describe it other than H.R. Geiger. And Ventress is sitting in the middle of it, and you see her, like, her face is kind of gone. Like, it's this weird, like, kind of black mask over most of it.
Yeah.
And she's like mumbling, and I guess she's quoting something from a Samuel Beckett novel at some point. That has to do with Malloy is the novel, and it has to do with a title character is tracked down by a character called Moran, and their identities appear to merge towards the end of the novel. So that makes sense with what's going on with her, but it's hard to hear because it's all like distorted and weird, almost like Nicolas Cage at the end of Mandy.
Yeah.
But when Natalie Portman enters and she says like Dr. Ventress, and when Jennifer Jason Leigh turns around, her face is fine. I just love that little touch. Like, that was amazing.
Yeah, I enjoyed that greatly. But this is the part where that's where I kind of lost the plot. I can pick us back up once the other thing shows up. But, like, what happened to her?
So,
like,
she's basically just like, and again, I love this line where she's talking about, we spoke. Do you remember what we said? Like, we said we had to find out what was in the lighthouse. That part's, it's gone from me now. It's a part of me now. And I just love this line where she's like, it's not like us. It is unlike us. And just like that change of phrase makes it so much more alien.
Yeah.
And I just love that little touch. But then she basically says annihilation and starts just becoming energy or it's what it appears like. She's, and I didn't really notice it till the second time through, that because all all this light starts pouring out of her mouth, but that her arms are like shriveling up.
I don't think I noticed that either.
Yeah, that like she is becoming the energy, and the energy kind of forms in this weird like pulsing mass that you see in close-ups of in the opening credits, and this hole enters in the center of it that Natalie Portman is looking into. Meanwhile, the soundtrack is just going bonkers, and yeah. it's amazing.
Well, this is where the sound design is fucking beautiful.
But a drop of blood from Natalie Portman goes into the swirling mass of energy, and you see close-ups of cells splitting and dividing. And just the way this is all done is just phenomenal, how then like it pulls back and you see it's basically made this weird... It's not even a clone of Natalie Portman at this point, but it's this like humanoid figure. Shimmering humanoid
figure.
What does
that remind me of?
Your mother? I don't know.
Dude.
I don't know what's going on in your head.
Don't even start that. It reminds me of her. Did you see her? Not her. Sorry. Under the Skin.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Scarlett Johansson movie.
It reminds me of...
The way the aliens actually look or whatever.
Under the Skin. Yeah, yeah. Let's leave that vague if somebody hasn't seen that movie. But that's what it reminded me of.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, almost black latex. It's like a archetypal form of human, but that came from 1996 raves.
Mm-hmm. And I hate how much brain damage this show has given me, that in my later viewings of this movie... I went like, I'm glad that they kept the figure kind of not genderless, but like pretty basic, and they didn't do a female Venom thing.
Yeah.
And I hate that I'm thinking of the movie Venom while watching this movie. But that's my own problem.
I mean, that's everybody's problem.
That's true. They made it everybody's problem.
You refracted that into the universe back onto the back onto the people.
My brain is the shimmer. Yeah. So Natalie Portman sees this figure and has the natural human reaction to shoot it and doesn't. And I love that effect where the bullets are like flying through it.
Yes.
And leaving trails, and just like it is becoming those trails
so
too.
So fucking good. Yeah.
And she runs, escapes out of the hole, and you see it disappear behind her and reappear back in the main level of the lighthouse.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love this scene. And I found out it was the scene with her and the mirror image. We'll just call it that. Was choreographed by a dancer named Bobby Jean Smith, who I guess there's a documentary about. And I'm not one for dance, really, but I really liked all the movements in this scene.
Well, actually, I refer to it as the dance scene in this part. Yeah, yeah.
Because this thing is mirroring her, and eventually, you figure out that it is just sort of mirroring her. And when she's like rushing towards the door to try to get out, and it follows her, and it's just pushing her up against the door because it's just mirroring her. That what you think is an attack is just her. Again, like that works so well for this character. Yeah. But it's just she's getting in her own way. And eventually, this whole scene is amazing, but eventually she gets it to hold a phosphorus grenade. But when that happens, well, I guess before we get to that, it knocks her out and you have this gap of time. And then you see it like lay down next to her. And then mirror her reactions.
That happens twice where he knocks her down. Yeah. And I love like Natalie Portman doing this dramatic fall and then like this weird mannequin thing falling with it in this kind of dramatic.
So good. It was so great how it was done. And then she kind of figures out that it's mirroring her and gives it a phosphorus grenade. And I just love that effect of as she's touching it, it starts to like become more Natalie Portman. And the moment where you see its face like slowly morphing into Natalie Portman is terrifying when you like it's that uncanny valley thing where it's like just kind of a face but not really, and it makes it so much worse. Now there is, based on what follows, and again we're assuming people have seen this movie, there are people that are like, well, did the real Lena get out or was it the clone Lena? And I don't, to me when I was watching it, I didn't even think that was a discussion. Like, to me it's that she got out, but she is changed by this thing.
Yeah, I think they're confused. I think because I did read some of that, and I think what people are failing to understand is that it's not a clone. It's they are refracting back into one another. Yeah. That's why she has the tattoo from a guy she wasn't on the mission with. Is the concept is that one goes into the other goes into one. It is one. So whatever the thing is went into her as much as her went into it.
Well,
so
they
both escaped.
Yeah. Well, it also sort of feels like the fervor at the end of Inception, where people are like, well, is it the dream or not? That's not the point. The point is that it doesn't matter to him if it is. But Christopher Nolan aside, so she sets the thing on fire and escapes and is watching it. And the moments where you're watching it like be on fire, you know, talk about getting the thing's memory, how it goes over to Oscar Isaacs and kind of like lovingly touches its head. And then like I honestly felt bad for the thing. Because again, at no point, and they specifically bring it up several times, I think, where like this, whatever's happening isn't malevolent. It's just happening. And even though it's not malevolent, it's also not like benign or
well, I mean,
whatever the opposite of malevolent is.
Benevolent.
Like, but I still felt bad for it while it was burning alive.
Well, yes, I agree with you. But in the same way that cancer isn't malevolent, like cancer isn't evil.
Right.
Cancer is just, I mean, and that's what this movie is showing. It's like, because cancer actually causes mutation that can cause beauty, that like, you know, mutation is how humans evolve. And this is just this pure force of mutation. But yeah, no, you feel bad for the thing.
But but some of me wonders if some of that is the getting some of the more human aspects of it, like getting the Natalie Portman-esque memories and whatever becoming more human-like almost, is that that's why it seems more pathetic and sad when it's burning alive. But the whole lighthouse burns out, and this is a moment that lands like a thud, but I also kind of like that it does. So after all this, and this scene is the whole time is just wordless, and it's beautiful and great. Lighthouse on fire, crystal trees on fire falling apart, cut to Benedict Wong. Oh, it was Alien.
Yeah.
And just that line is just so like, boom, ham-handed. But then when it cuts to Natalie Portman and she's just like looking at him almost like, you didn't listen to a goddamn word I said. Yeah. And I like that. I like that the movie is confident enough not in the same way where it's like, no, this is a dumb thing and we're going to let you know it's dumb. But that like that reaction is dumb. And I enjoyed that a lot.
No, I did as well. And I think it's smart to do it that way because after that crescendo, there's no way to land this.
Yeah.
So you need...
I needed that drop.
Yeah. You need to make that drop palatable. So to put it... Because what they do is kind of expertly, they put it on another character. And it feels like, oh no, the character did something stupid.
Yeah.
Instead of... Because there's no way, like, they wrote themselves into... There's no way to end the movie other than on the beach. But that's... You kind of need to go back to Area X.
Right.
And yeah, so... She meets up with Oscar Isaac, who woke up, the moment that everything started burning down.
Yeah, apparently the destroying of the lighthouse.
The shimmer's gone.
Yeah, whatever organ failure was happening in him has stabilized.
Yeah, but they basically agree like, oh, we're both kind of changed, vague, mutated forms of the people that were in love. And I guess we're going to be cool. And they hug and you see their eyes kind of change color to match the other and... Like, also early in the film, I don't know if you noticed that in her eye, you see this worm.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, there's, like, this kind of worm thing under her eye, like, when she's being pressed against the wall, which is kind of creepy. But, at the end, when they hug, their eyes change color.
Right.
They kind of show, which I like, because it's also, so in the way you can read the movie is, like, this is the most convoluted way to repair your relationship.
Yeah, well, sort of.
Because they both mutated themselves into people that can be with one another.
But it's also just that through the act of destruction, you are changed.
Yeah.
That even if this was the quote unquote real Kane, everything they've been to has changed them. And so now they have to move forward with that. That even having cancer has changed you because you no longer there. I don't remember who. Any cancer survivor will probably tell you that you don't like survive cancer. Like it's still there. Like that specter is still there. It could come back. It's just that chance of it coming back just decreases immensely over time. And so you're changed having had that experience. And I like that annihilation is not just destruction. It's the change that can come out of that too. And that the ending isn't like when I was trying to read stuff about this movie, there was a billion articles that were like, the ending explained. Fuck that. Like, wholeheartedly just fuck that.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of YouTube things.
Yeah, like
that.
I fully believe, you know, and I think you kind of have to like give your own sort of theory about it and talk about this movie. But like in my mind, I don't think it's like malevolent. I think there's just, these are two people that are changed and they're back together now, whatever that means. I don't know what that means. They're not making a sequel to this movie. I don't want to read any of the books. I just like this movie as it is. But like everyone has all these, you know, puzzle box theories of what like this means in the long term or what this all says. And I think I kind of reject that. Just enjoy it and see what you think about it.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a definitive answer. But to me, it's that. It's that these two people having had changed more, definitely more than, you know, him more than her to a degree. But like, they're both not who they were. And how do you move forward from here?
Yeah, no, I think there's a good overlay for kind of PTSD war people because they're mm-hmm. both. I mean, there is a reason that she's a soldier in the movie. That there's another overlay to that is that like you know you change when anywhere, so everything is just kind of mutating mass. Like anytime you're in war zone, that every single thing does change you, even if it doesn't, you know, immediately. Even if you survive, in quotes.
Yeah, and I don't. I mean, like I said, I understand this is a trilogy of books. But, like, I have no interest in knowing, and that the movie is kind of a dream of a book or whatever, but I have no interest in knowing more than what's presented to me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want those answers. I'm happy with what I've gotten, and I'm happy to fill in the blanks or what that means to me or whatever, but I don't need definitive, like, no, turns out this is a thing from Beta 9. Yeah. And its mission here.
No, I'm good. Yeah. I don't want more of this. I'm kind of curious to read the books because I think this was so kind of, I could see that the book was well written maybe. Mm-hmm. So I would like to read it just to, because maybe there's more to it. Like maybe some of these questions are in the book and they continue on in a way that like doesn't show up in the film.
This is how I felt about the novelization of Terminator 2, which is the only book I've ever read.
Yeah.
Back to kayfabe.
I mean, I thought the same thing about Terminator Genesis, mm-hmm. the novelization, of course. Yeah.
Right. Obviously.
I think Timothy Zahn wrote that one.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he had a really good story about future hot chocolate. So, John, next episode we should talk about a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I know that changes from our normal thing where we talk about books
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the what knitting patterns are popular in the world of knitetry.
Yes.
I don't know what...
That was a good word.
Yeah, it works for me. So, what do we want to watch?
Let's watch A Dark Song.
Okay. Is that like River Song from Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Melody Pond?
Mm-hmm. It's that thing.
Spoilers.
It's going to be awful, is what that means.
I will kill you.
Yeah, I know. No, this is a sort of an occult, I guess, horror movie. It's a little known movie, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it's on the old Netflix and other streaming services.
Good. And it came out in 2016.
So, yeah.
Just in case there's another movie called that.
A classic at this point.
All right, so what are we watching?
A Dark Song.
A Dark Song. Yeah, so do that. Remember to rate, review, subscribe, share everything on your social media because that helps people listen to the show. I can't stress enough how impossible it is for people to find the show unless you guys tell them about it. So that'd be really helpful. And one-time guest on this show... Many time guest on the Alex Cast, my other show, Steph,
mm-hmm.
has her own podcast. It's called TMI Tuesdays. That being Too Much Information Tuesdays. It is available on iTunes and all sorts of other media players.
Yes.
I think it's tmitoesdays.wordpress.com, but just search for TMI Tuesdays on your favorite podcatcher. You can hear such guests as me. And some asshole, some other asshole, me. Then John.
Oh, okay.
Unless you're episode 3. Either way.
I don't know what episode I am, but I'm sure I'm an asshole.
I was the first one. It is echoey as shit because we were just learning how to set up our studio. John is on. Hopefully it's less echoey.
It is less echoey.
And it works out perfectly. So remember to find that. Also, I have been putting little clips of John and I, like 5-minute clips of us doing warm up and dumb shit on my Patreon. So patreon.com/AlexBolin. If you want to sign up, it's $5 a month, gets you all the stuff.
All of it.
Yeah. Like I have
his immortal soul.
Well, I have the first 100 episodes of the Alex Cast, which aren't on the actual feed anymore,
which
are, I mean, they're unlistenable, but there's actually, you can hear John and I talking from 8 years ago on there.
Oh my God.
Or whenever your first episode was.
Wasn't my first episode with Foe?
It might be. I don't know. I don't want to listen to those. I am afraid what's in them.
But anyway, way, you should, audience. Yeah.
Well, hey, you know, if you like this show, I know there's some people that really enjoy the John and Alex Hate stuff. There are some ancient Eldritch episodes.
Oh my goodness.
Of us talking. But anyway, yeah, those are those things. I will put I'll put links in the show notes, and that's it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.